Hey y'all, welcome back to the podcast where we're watching and we're talking. I'm Duncan, you know, blanket connoisseur, actor, and lover of pot pie. I'm joined today with a guest. Alex, you want to introduce yourself?
Hey y'all.
Yep. They were circling back into now phase two of the MCU and hitting Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
Which did $1.2 billion in the box office on a $200 million budget. So, you know, people were really loving Avengers and came back again for this. That's exciting. But what I really loved about this movie, I think, is this is the first time, in my life where a superhero movie actually tackled a topic pretty blatantly that, you know, everyday humans deal with, and kind of grounding their main character, but also just as an overall topic for other people to relate to. Maybe they did this in The Dark Knight a little bit, but yeah, I think it's the first time, and it's Tony dealing with his PTSD and of the events from Avengers, and, you know, going into the hole in the sky to drop off the bomb or whatever. And for me, I felt, wow, you're really tackling this topic and how it can affect and really reach anyone. And granted, for Tony, these are extremes in which he reached them, right? Like, he was battling extraterrestrial beings. Yeah. And then you mentioned before, like, it's building up, right? Because he's had near-death experiences before from other earthly matters, but still matters out of his control, whether he was being held hostage in a war zone or he whiplashes, you know, choking him out. So I think it was interesting to dive into the concept of mental health and how it affects people. It doesn't really shy away from you just because you're a genius, billionaire, playboy philanthropist. So what about you, Alex? Like,
not when you're talking, it kind of... So I would say that Iron Man 3 was probably the first one that it went in depth into PTSD. Jeez Louise. PTSD. But I remember the scene from Incredible Hulk when he was in the shower. Ooh. And the shower head was kind of going, and then he had a flashback of the guns being fired at him when he was in the shower, and he kind of like dug down in the shower.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that image had popped into my head, like while you're speaking. I was like, wait, that just reminded me of like when he was in the shower and he kind of dug down. So I would say they like kind of like gave you a little smidget of it.
Yeah.
The Hulk, and then they kind of fully dived into it in Iron Man.
Definitely.
I also liked the beginning because you see Jensen again, his cave mate from the first one. And he... I don't know what else to call it. Cave mate. And Jensen mentioned it. He's like, I met you at a conference one time. And he's like, I don't remember. And he's like, well, if I was that drunk, I don't know how I could deliver...
A speech.
Yeah, that speech that you did. And then it's funny because you're seeing it. He was like, oh, yeah, he was like super drunk. And then Ian was like, okay, I'll talk to you later, maybe later. Mm-hmm. And then you meet Killian. And then he shows up and then he's like, it's the thing they do in movies where like they take like a beautiful person and they want to nerd him up. And so they give him bad skin and a bad wig, and Happy had a bad wig too.
Yeah.
And then he kind of blows him off and he's like, I'll meet you up at the roof in like five minutes. And then what I pointed out, what I thought was funny, because you said you didn't notice it, when I can't think of her name, the scientist that ends up working with
Hansen.
Yes. So they're in her hotel room and she's trying to get Happy not to touch the ficus, and then ends up blowing up, and then Happy kind of reacts and hops on Tony, and then he mentioned, because it's 1999, so he's like it's fine. He's like, okay, so it's not Y2K. And he's like, no, it's just the glitches she was talking about. So I thought that was kind of a funny tidbit that I picked up on, and I was like, oh, that's kind of funny. I never like realized that he said that at that point, but because everybody thought like the world was ending, right? And Y2K, and then Y2K it blows up, and it's New Year's Eve, so like that's the thing too, because it's like it's New Year's Eve in 1999 too, so it's like really on the money. And then I think when they come back after Tony has his flashback, I think it's again either Christmas or New Year's Eve again. So it's that scene where Happy is now security.
Yep.
And he's like over protective of Pepper, and he's like, what's your badge? And she's like, okay, complaints have gone up 300% since you've been here. But she goes to Tony's house and he has that big rabbit in the driveway. Yeah. And I think it's like was New Year's Eve again or something. So it's kind of like a
like pretty close to, yeah, you know,
for what happened in 1999 of it. And Killian, he shows up Aldridge. The same. He's in
that's another name.
Yeah, he's in Pepper's office too.
Yeah,
so she's like, ooh,
showing her his brain.
Yeah,
it's the terminology. Yeah, his big brain. That that was the terminology I think Happy used. Yeah. Right.
And he said, she was like, how are you doing? And he's like, oh, it's just some physical therapy. But then we talked about him, how he was showing the brain and how you can alter genetics. And we're, yeah, like, did he probably just experiment on himself to correct his, I think it was spine or back or whatever.
Something like that. It was like his.
So I think he had a cane at the beginning.
Yeah, he had a cane at the beginning. There was something wrong with how he walked. So somewhere along the lines with his posture, legs,
or yeah,
whatever. All those points, yeah. It was just kind of,
yeah, Moose can too.
The narcissism of it all, I felt like, kind of came up. Because, like, Killian, I truly believe he did use whatever that formula or whatever Hansen was working on himself. But the narcissistic behavior, I felt like, had to have already exist there. In the sense, I feel like.
You think so?
I felt like it was.
Or do you think it happened after he realized Tony, how
attractive, like, he was? Or
no, like after, you know, Tony blew him off. So then he probably was just like, okay, he playing me. And then it probably built up over time. Or you think he had the narcissistic mindset before?
I think he did before. I think what we see with him interacting with Tony and Hansen in the elevator is him just trying to play up himself. Like, you know, when you're like going off to like sell yourself to someone, you're like,
but he has a really nerdy touch to him though. He's like, I started, it's aim.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, I don't know, you get narcissistic from that?
Not from that specifically. Oh, okay. I don't get narcissistic from that. I think
when he comes back to show
his big brain. Yeah, okay. His big brain.
But by that time, he's already had probably all these experiments done already.
Yeah, and lived a different life already. And there have been probably moments where his ego was stroked when it probably didn't need to be. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
well, you have a bunch of yes men. Kind of like with Steve, like, he was lame looking and scrawny before, and now you're just... You're like hot shit. So probably like he's probably been like, oh, I look good as fuck. I know I look good.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. What is it? Because that goes back to when you just touched on Captain America. Yeah. They talk about how like giving the serum only makes you more of who you are. Mm-hmm. Right. So I don't leave it all on Tony being a bad person to Killian for make Killian track of like,
it's probably been like he's probably been brushed aside, but a lot of people, but then to be brushed aside by Tony Stark, probably someone he's probably really looked up to. It might be a like don't meet your heroes type situation. Yeah. And he was really excited to meet Tony, and Tony just basically left him on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that probably like really hit the nail.
Yeah. One part I really enjoyed.
Nail on the needle.
You got it.
Nail on the hammer.
We are full of mush mouth and lazy metaphors today.
Nail on the needle. You get the nail on the needle.
Nail on the needle. I like that they touched on this pretty quickly, though. Tony was very honest with Pepper and said, like, I'm not doing okay. Like, I'm having these struggles. And it's very early on. It's not like he, like, waits the whole movie to explain why he's not okay. He openly says,
I can't sleep.
New York incident really messed me up. And the only thing I could do that can keep me together is tinker.
Yeah, because he was on Mark 42.
Mark 42.
And then you notice he was injecting it. Is that like very premature nanotech?
I think it is premature nanotech.
Because then he was like, because then it's that scene where he's like having a bad dream and it kind of comes and attacks Pepper.
Yeah, it is premature nanotech, which I feel like an Easter egg for Infinity War where, you know, comes out of his body and explain. I think he even tells someone at some point, like, there is no more taking the suit from me. I am.
It's me.
Yeah.
It's not me. Think about that. But yeah. So that's pretty cool. Like, if you can see how he advances the technology, like he, like in the first one, he notices like, oh, there's an ice problem. Fix that. He takes whatever mistake or whatever the downfall of the suit. He's always improving. So for it to be like a part of him, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I think it being a part of him is kind of like the advanced, quote unquote, workaround for when he, because in this one, they talk about overheating the suit, right? The major flaw is to be able to overheat the suit. I think the nanotech is supposed to be like his work through that. Mm. But that was a nice touch. And I think why I appreciated it so much is because this movie, to me, centers around so much around mental health, mm-hmm. is the honesty that you got from this genius person. Mm-hmm. I was explaining to you before, I had a very specific experience with a college professor who basically discredited mental health and was just like, it's not a real thing, da da da. And they were a chemistry professor. And for me, that was just... It's something I can cherish and like really enjoy in watching a movie and being like, okay, I'm not alone in this thought process. Like, it's a pretty widely accepted theme that like most scientists acknowledge the fact mm-hmm. of the existence of mental health. And this isn't something where I quote unquote was, I think he said it was bullshit. His exact words was like bullshit or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, you know what? Kind of one of those conversations where you just dead it and mm-hmm. leave it alone. So yeah, it was just really nice to be like, you know, no, there are people, mm-hmm. there are other people out there that understand that mental health exists and is a thing. He's an extreme, I think, mm-hmm. regardless of the fact of his station or whatever. It's not insane to think that people of his station also acknowledge the fact that mental health is a thing. And for me, I felt like that was something that just resonated with me a whole lot. And seeing that was like, man, oh, okay. Like, it's kind of like a confirmation bias. Mm. There we go. Going on with that, there's the whole Pepper having to deal with someone, how she handled Tony in this whole process of dealing with his mental breakdown. I felt like she did the best she could with what she knew.
Yeah, especially for as long as she's been around Tony, that's mm-hmm. nothing she had to experience with him before. Because mm-hmm. somewhat, I would say he was somewhat, you know, put together, not like well put together, but it wasn't like to the point where he was struggling mm-hmm. with PTSD and her trying to like figure that out.
Yeah.
And they were living together. Because I remember he mentioned, he was like, things feel better because you moved in.
Mm-hmm.
So...
There's a lot of onus put on Pepper now. I feel like it was like as a partner, and I appreciate that they're going on this journey together, and it's not like, oh, we'll figure it out on your own. Like there was a lot of empathy on this journey. Equally so, it's not just Tony bearing down on Pepper. It's also Pepper being able to voice her concerns to him, and he has to take it on the chin because it's like, yeah, I'm. This is affecting you in a way too that I need to acknowledge and accept. It was once again for all of this to be put into a superhero film where in most cases people are just waiting for stuff to blow up in a huge fight.
Was it ever mentioned how many months or it was after the events of New York? Did they ever touch on that? I don't think it did. I wonder how long it, like in between it was.
Yeah, if it was, it was probably like a background thing where. Mm-hmm. You know how, like, you wouldn't really probably catch it unless it was, like, the fifth or sixth watch through it or something like that. I don't think it's explicitly stated. I know Harley is harping on it, and Harley being the little kid that Tony sees, Harley is harping on it, like, just wants to know more about it. But oddly enough, Harley was both Tony's biggest benefactor, or, I don't know, benefactors, asset, maybe? Advocate? I don't know what the right word would be, but like, you know, his
biggest... For him to be a little kid, too.
Yeah, for him to be a little kid. But also, like, his biggest agitator, too, right? Because he actively is throwing out his triggers to, like, call back to New York. But then also trying to be the person to help him through that is being like, all right, we're recognizing something is wrong here. Do you know why something is wrong? What about it makes this situation wrong?
I don't know if you said it or if I was watching a YouTube video. It was a part where Harley comes in and he sees Tony in the garage. And then he goes, who are you? And he's like, I'm Tony. It's like the exchange, like, who are you? And then he kind of knows who Tony is because he's like, I'm Tony Stark. And then the kid was like, well, technically you're dead. And then he gives him the
paper.
Yeah. And someone was like, so do you know who Tony is or not? Like, you said, who are you? But you know he's Tony Stark. But then he's like, I'm Tony Stark. He's like, well, technically you're dead. And I thought that was so funny because someone was like, but do you know? So you know who Tony is.
Yeah.
So you know being difficult for no reason.
Harley is to me, he's like, introduces this very difficult character for how short he's in the movie.
Is it difficult, or is it because Tony never had to really had experience with being with younger kids like that?
Ooh.
Because it's like, I feel like anybody, like, kids are just, you know, kids difficult. And difficult in themselves. But it's someone like Tony who probably never had to be around kids like that.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time where he's also dealing with PTSD, and now you're dealing with a kid, so you're probably just like, are you annoyed, really? And then this kid is coming in, so.
That too. I didn't really consider it that much. I think I was so wrapped up in Tony, I didn't think about him recognizing the fact that Harley is a kid, right? Yeah. And so, what does it mean to be around kids? I'm the baby of my family. Yeah. So, when I am around younger cousins or anything like that, I would say my younger first cousins would probably be the first to be like, you're kind of a dick a lot of the time. Mm. And it's just because when we were growing up, I was so used to just being like, well, I'm the youngest one. So as I grow up and as I'm expected to meet other standards, I'm expecting the world to respond the same way. It's like, oh, I'm growing up, so you have to grow up too. And not really.
As the younger kid,
because it would just be like, oh, so for instance, let me put it this way. If my mom is expecting me to behave in a certain way, right? Because. Yeah, I guess talking back would be the best example, right? Of like, you're old enough now to know that you probably shouldn't be, you shouldn't be talking back in this manner. Cool. Understood that, like, sat down, had a conversation, sticks. But if my cousin, who is 3 years younger than me, is still trying to figure things out as a kid, I go in with the expectation, well, he's old enough now to expect that he shouldn't be talking back.
I feel like you go into that a lot. Like, when we're talking about other movies, I feel like your thing is like, well, Tony should have known. These people should have known. Sometimes I'm like that, but it depends on the situation. Like, if I'm talking to someone, I'm like, girl, you should already do that. Like, we old enough to, like, not. Like, but it's something that, like, isn't hard. Girl, you should know. You should have been washing your hands. Kind of like that. So, like, on a different level with Tony, it's like, he should have knew his weapons was over there. He was like, was he really going to know his weapons? Because it's just like, you just expected people to already know.
No. Like, you're expecting people to see the world through the lenses you're going through it. And it takes a second for you to step back and be like, oh, like, not everyone's going through that same lens or everyone has that same expectation. So at this point, I'm bought into Tony, so I'm not giving Harley any room. Mm. I really felt like it was Harley just messing with them because Harley isn't used to having, he admits to saying like his dad isn't around.
Cigarettes or something.
So his dad left for cigarettes, but that was 6 years ago or something like that. He hasn't come back.
So he's probably just excited to have an older male figure, and it's Tony Stark.
Yeah.
So it's just like,
I feel like he knows who Tony Stark is.
Yeah.
And he knows who he is. So because he knows who he is, he's going to behave the way that Tony Stark would behave in a similar-esque, what he thinks would be a similar-esque situation. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it was just like, oh, he's giving him little Tony back. Like, you know, it's like a little given, a cat and mouse type of game.
Mm-hmm.
Is how I took it. But now it, once again, that whole lens of also, Harley's a kid, so he's gonna be a kid.
Well, yeah, I'm the oldest of six, so. And 1, 2, 3, 4 of them are all the same age. So it's 21, 20, 19, something like that. I don't know, it's too many of them. But as being the oldest, I could see when my sisters were just doing it to irritate. Because you're at the oldest, like you said, you're the youngest, but as the oldest, it's like, don't do that to them. But you're like, oh, they get on my nerve. Like, my sisters used to always bring up the stuff I used to do. I'm like, did I used to do this? Like, Alice, I don't think I used to do this stuff. They said I used to put, like, hot glue on pennies and throw it at them, but I don't remember that. I remember taking the pennies and putting them on the light bulb so they'll get a little hot and then throwing them at them.
Oh,
but I don't know
how
to do. But I remember, like, my sisters had a bunk bed.
Mm-hmm.
And on the side of the bunk bed, it had drawers.
Mm-hmm.
I remember giving them a wedgie and, like, hanging them on the knobs of the drawers. And my mom's like, you can't do that. It's going to hurt your, like, coochie area because it's up there. And I'm like, but listen, you're the oldest of all these kids. And it's like, and I used to be a big Brad Dow collector. Mm-hmm. So, and I just recently discovered them in my basement, but some of them got water damage because, but I had Brad Dows mm-hmm. and I didn't open up any of them. I think I only had one Dow that was out of the box. Mm-hmm. So I had this big tall dresser, and like all my Brad Dows are just like organized up there. And only one was out the box. And I came home from my dad's house. Mm-hmm. And my Dow was out the box. And I was like, oh, is that my? Because I was just like, and I hate when my stepdad was like, you should have put it up. I was like, it was in my room. I shouldn't have to put it up in my room. Mm-hmm. And it was in the box. Like, mm-hmm. don't be having people just open up boxes.
Right.
And so, like, as the older one, you're always just looking like, these kids are annoying as hell. Like, but it's not like they're doing it just because they're my sisters, because they're younger than me. I'm older mm-hmm. than everybody. Well, the next one, one's after me, I'm older than by 6 years. Mm-hmm. But it's still like, oh my God. But when you're like in high school and they're done, you're like, God, you're
yeah, that's a lot of personality.
We are, that's yeah, yeah. It's like that too. So it's just like being around kids in general. Mm-hmm. And then I guess, I don't know how it feels to be the youngest, because when you're the youngest, I feel like at that point, parents are just like, all right. So compared to like when you're older. So I feel like it's mostly like them being an annoying kid and mm-hmm. Tony not used to being around kids. He's always around adults.
Right.
And Tony was the only child. So, mm-hmm. and, you know, I don't know if there's ever mentioned in comics about him having uncles and aunts and if they had cousins. So it's usually just him. And then he was so much smarter than everybody.
Yeah.
So he's 17 already. And like, I think he graduated college at 17. Yeah. So it's not like he really had a chance to be around other kids his age.
Yeah.
If you're graduating college at 17, you probably basically just blew by mm-hmm. kindergarten everything. And then high school and everything. Yeah. So he's always used to being around adults. So I think just being around a kid for that long, he's just like, oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. And then you see later on, as the movies progress, he talks about he wants a kid and mm-hmm. name him Morgan and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And they have a daughter, so.
Yeah, yeah, it's an interesting journey. I'm really glad that we both have those varying viewpoints. I mean, I just never thought about the idea of like having to like him not having been around kids created equal amount of energy or the relationship or environment between them. Mm-hmm. And I mean, clearly they keep in touch because he's at Tony's funeral.
Yeah, you know? And I wonder, I also want to know like how much they keep in touch, or they're just like, we're going to invite him to the funeral. Because then Tony does leave him a little workshop at the end of the movie and he has all this stuff. Yeah. So I'd be interested to know like what he did with that. Like if the kid advanced and tried to create his own adventures mm-hmm. and see if like the later phases, if they add him into it.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
I'm not going to lie. He wasn't as cute as he was when he was in 3, when he saw him in Endgame. I was like, at first it took me a minute to process. I'm like, who is that? And I'm like, oh, that's the boy.
It's the boy.
It's the cat. It's the child. It's Grogu.
Grogu's baby grows.
So yeah, the funny that you never really recognize that he's never been around kids.
Just be like, oh. So with that, we have our introduction to Iron Patriot also. And I feel like...
I had to correct you because you said War Machine.
I did have him down as War Machine. He was always going
to
be
War Machine. They said it didn't test well with the citizens. And so they went to
Iron Patriot. Forget the citizens.
Mm-hmm. And I think he said the government was nervous just because the events of Avengers happening. Uh-huh. And then he's talking to Tony at some little restaurant. That's when Tony has his anxiety attack. First idea, but he's basically saying, like, the Mandarin isn't an Avengers-level threat, really.
Yeah.
He's just saying, like, we can handle him because, I guess, just terrorism. You know, I guess the
U.S. Right? You're run-of-the-mill terrorism. Yeah. It's okay. We can address this.
We can do this. We don't need the Avengers.
No.
That's when Tony, the little boy, I love doing the Christmas story. And the girl was trying to get the autograph. And then, because I don't know if this is a thing that if it was only in Tony's head or the kid actually... you know, asked the question. He was like saying like, how did you get out the hole or something?
Yeah,
and he like freaks out, and that's when he has a panic attack.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I also thought that was like an hallucination.
Yeah, but the kid could actually probably ask that too.
The kid could have asked that.
Because kids ask
Dumb. I mean, not dumb. Invasive.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yes. Interesting
questions. Interesting questions. There we go. That's a better word than invasive. So yeah, that was that whole exchange. Rhodey's interesting to me in this, right? Because like I feel like there's someone that Tony should be able to lean on about PTSD.
Oh, because he's in the military?
Yeah, be my military buddy.
Doesn't mean Rhodey experienced it.
Doesn't mean Rhodey experienced it.
And then also, Tony spends most of his time with Pepper.
Yes.
So I feel like, and they live together.
Yeah, no, and I'm not saying he should have leaned on Rhodey instead of Pepper. Yeah. I'm just saying, like,
you're surprised he didn't.
I'm surprised he didn't at all. Like, and I feel,
but you probably didn't have that, because I know there's some friends I'm really close with, but some things I probably wouldn't feel like wanted to tell them. So Tony being Tony, maybe he didn't want Rhodey to see him
that way.
Yeah, suffering from PTSD.
Yeah, because this is my genius friend who just allegedly, well, not allegedly, but feels like he always has the answers, and here's this point where he doesn't have an answer.
And he probably doesn't want to let Rhodey, like,
know. Because then, you know, Rhodey also has a thing where he kind of stole Tony's tech. So, you know, you're unfit. We've had this discussion before. Now all of a sudden you're unfit again. So yeah, we get into our fellow thespian in this movie, the Mandarin, for Iron Man fans, for Marvel fans of the comics, this was a huge, like,
they're upset.
They are not happy.
They upset.
For those of you that have been listening through, Ryan is very upset of how the Mandarin was handled. But I will say they went off, after this movie, they released a short where they kind of rewrote.
I heard about it, but I've never seen it.
I've seen it. It's actually really good. Mm-hmm. And it's not like it was like rewritten to be like, well, it kind of was rewritten to be like our bad, but like at the same time, how it was like shot and like the very little dialogue, but like still like the scope of the message that it sends, it didn't come off like hokey or like, it wasn't like a Sonic redesign type situation. It didn't feel like that.
Okay.
It felt more like we're adding to the story, not necessarily like completely saying like, oh, we completely messed up,
or like, we didn't have time to touch on this in the movie here. But I don't know, like, I don't know if this is the first, well, you could, there's a theme of like really Marvel, like you said, it's its own universe, so we're not gonna stick to what they had in the comics, but it's a good draw for people. But I feel like the thing is, did it make $1 billion because people wanted to see what happens as a consequence to Avengers, or because they mentioned the Mandarin and the Ten Rings? Like, what is, what do you think? That I feel like it was just, I'm probably drew in people, but I'm pretty sure it was just like, you know, they're good. We're coming because we want to see what's the aftermath of Avengers.
For the casual moviegoer,
who didn't know about the movie.
I think it's the aftermath.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
For trying to finally, like, rope in those final little seedlings of comic book enthusiasts and cartoon enthusiasts.
Mm.
I think it was the Mandarin. And I think you need both of those audiences in depth to get to $1 billion. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I don't know much about the Mandarin. So, like...
Yeah. So, from what I understand and know of him, which is very minimal compared to Ryan, I'm talking like microscopic, he is quite possibly Iron Man's greatest villain. And I could be misspeaking. I'm sure someone's gonna lambost me with a comment if I'm misspeaking.
Lambost, all right. And the word of the day, lambost. Can you spell it for me?
Yes, lamb and then boast.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, he is probably one of his greatest villains. And
I can see if people, okay.
It's like, it's the equivalent of taking Venom and minimizing him to the point of just being.
So if Spider-Man 3? No.
We went there.
There's a lot of super villains in that movie.
It was so many. There were a lot.
Like so.
There were a lot. Four? Five.
Three. Four?
Four. Dr. Connors, because Dr. Connors is technically Lizard Man, but he doesn't fully become Lizard
Man. In Spider-Man 3? Yeah. Not Amazing Spider-Man.
In Spider-Man 3, he's the one analyzing the symbiote, and he yells at Peter to take it off. He's not take it off. He's like, but Peter, I hope you don't have any more of this stuff.
Are we counting him? Do you have, I don't know, is his real name Sandman?
It's not his real name. It's the guy that killed his Uncle Ben. I don't know.
He gets turned into like the Sandman kind of thing. And then you have Harry. Mm-hmm. You have kind of like the Green Goblin. And then you have Venom. Mm-hmm. Who's about three? I don't think there's anybody else. Yeah.
But
unless you count in Jane Jameson. What is that?
Jonah Jameson. Wait. One more time. Do it for me.
Jonah Jane Jameson.
Okay, there we go. I can see where the vitriol is from the mishandling. Mm-hmm. I think this is the last time, though, I think Marvel listens to backlash and kind of, quote unquote, rewrites anything for fans.
Oh, yeah. They don't care. Like, I feel like Marvel is not a movie company that you're going to Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, you're not. At this point, as we enter phase four, if anyone wants to write to Marvel and explain how the fan base is upset, Marvel,
it's going in the garbage.
They're literally going to be like toughest of luck. Toughest of titties. Just do not care.
Toughest of titties.
The
second word of the day, the first phrase of the day, toughest of titties. Send us a tweet using toughest of titties to rot at Twitter.
At the rot pod. That was our buddy the Mandarin, I guess. Like, really, you know, our actor, you know.
They find him and he's just like, I've been here the whole time. They kind of pull me into this room and tell me to say these lines and I just do what they tell me to do. Yeah. I'm an actor. They tell me to say these things. And then the fact that they took credit, because the target of the Chinese theater wasn't really a target. It was just Happy popped up. Yeah. And saw the other guy giving, I think he was a war vet, because he had dog tags, I think.
War vet.
Giving him the drugs. And did he OD? Because he asked him, can he regulate? And he was
yeah.
But then it's just like, why would you take all of them like right now? So then I think he just took too many, and then that's when he just blew up.
Yeah.
So then they kind of took credit for it. Because then he started talking about fortune cookies. It was like, fortune cookies is... It's not Chinese. It sounds Chinese, but it's American made. But the other American Chinese made thing is a Chinese theater. And it's like, but okay.
It's not really a...
Demi Lovato look. He blew it up. Demi Lovato stare. Radio Rebel stare.
Radio Rebel. So that's our buddy the Mandarin, guys. Our main villains are Killian and Hansen. They teamed up. They Wonder Twinned United for this powwow. This powwow. Yeah, Fusion Ha. Got a little Dragon Ball Z going on there. I don't want to say, like, the fascination of making scientists, like, the evil mad scientist trope for Hansen was...
I'm trying to advance my stuff,
yeah,
but I don't think it was really the mad scientist trope. But you always need a mad scientist because you know
they make things fun.
You get
everything's better with a Bill scientist Nye,
or you get something else, you know.
Yeah, everything's better.
Everybody can't be a Bill Nye.
But back to Hansen, you know, just trying to get her job done,
yeah, or
her vision in life complete,
yeah,
trying to see her vision through. Yeah.
I think Killian Moore thing was just revenge for Tony.
Revenge? Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to prove that I'm better than you and I'm going to get revenge type thing. Because then at the end, he's like fighting Tony and I don't know how many, all Tony suits blow, right?
Yeah, he blows them up.
Yeah.
What is it? Is it New Year's Christmas Day protocol? What is it? He calls it, it's some type of protocol. But yeah.
Is it Christmas Day?
It's something,
and everything's blow up. But don't you, Pepper's in the suit too, so that's kind of like a foreshadowing. Because then in Endgame, she kind of shows up in the suit. Because Tony's like, "Your mom never wears anything to make her," and then she pops. Was like, "Damn, bitch, girls get it done."
Girls get it done.
But yeah, so I think his is kind of more like Tony kind of blew me off. I'm hot shit now. Like, you don't recognize me.
And I just feel like that's me addressing Killian. I feel like get over yourself. Like, if you're doing so well for yourself,
some things hit deep. It was funny when you said that, because get over yourself, because I don't know if you've ever seen The Greatest Showman.
Yes.
But you still have Hugh Jackman's character, even though, like, people think him having a circus is a joke, he's still trying to prove to his wife's parents
that he's worth something.
Yeah. So it's just like, and that was years, because, like, at the beginning of the movie, he was like 10 when he got slapped. And so that don't just go away. Like, you just slapped me. Like, and you said I was, like, worth nothing. So, like,
Tony just told him to wait on the roof. That's about it.
Listen, but it's, like, embarrassing. Like, this is somebody I really have something I want to talk to Tony Stark about. So, this guy right now is, like, the pinnacle kind of all this, like, technology, and then you just blow me off.
Alex, is there someone you're saying you're holding a vendetta against that you're just waiting for things to pop so you can just go?
Not at the moment.
Not at the moment. All right. No. Keep me posted. And we could probably circle back to it at a later date.
I mean, I'm thinking.
I just want to be, you know, I don't even want to tell you present. I don't even have to be like Hanson in this situation. I'm thinking more of like a Mandarin type role, you know, where I'm just there kind of in the way.
I'm thinking of Incredibles 2. The screen slave.
Yeah, the screen slave.
You know what I mean? Like a screen slave. No, at the moment, no. Uh-huh. But I feel like I can see how some people, like a thing, I feel like if I meet someone I really admired and they just blew me off, it's just like, I'm going to prove to you that like you ain't shit. Like, Why would you do this to me?
You have to kill all those people.
I could damn near kill you.
Kill so many people. Like, I just think about, I'm a petty individual. I really am. But to wrap in other human life just to get like...
Listen. Some people be like that. That's damn near every villain movie ever. Like, think about it. You have... The Dark Knight, like, even though, like, it...
Wait, the Dark Knight or the Dark Knight Rises? Joker is...
Because the Joker is, like, he didn't really kill the people on the boat, but he was using them as, like, I'm a proof to humanity that they damn near might kill each other.
How the Joker exists in that universe is he is the embodiment of chaos. So I understand that.
Oh, just that point. Listen, it's still a point. He was going... Listen.
Killian was trying to quote unquote be a betterment to society and humankind.
So he was, but then like when he, I said the scene when he went to go meet Pepper, she was like, I feel like we can't use this because it'd be weaponized.
Yeah.
And that's a good take because it's like the US is always trying to weaponize some.
Always. Always.
They probably could weaponize a pen.
They really will.
Like, I got that.
That made me think of Chronicles of Riddick.
Weaponize it. Which one?
That made me think of Chronicles of Riddick.
That's the one with
Vin Diesel.
I haven't seen it since I was like.
Oh, I love those movies.
7. When the movie came out, my dad would always watch it.
He puts a teacup on there, and it's he puts a teacup on the counter or whatever, and the guy's like, "What are you gonna do with that?" And he's like, "I'm gonna kill you with it." Essentially, the line. I don't know the exact line, but he relays the message that he's going to kill them with a teacup. And
you slit their throat?
No, he takes the teacup and shoves it into the guy's solar plexus and twists.
Interesting. It's kind of like in Dark Knight.
In Dark Knight?
When he puts a pen or a pencil and he, pow.
Yeah, want to see a magic trick?
Boom. I was watching a video and someone said there is an actual word for that medical condition. I forgot the name of it, but it's like when you get an injury through your eye. I forgot what it was. I watched the YouTube channel New Rock Stars a lot. So like they do like a deep dive. He does a real deep dive. Like stuff like, he goes into, like, if he's doing a rewatch on something like Star Wars, he would translate the language. Yeah. Like, if it was like, this is whatever this means in Star Wars language, I went back and translated for you. Like, he did a whole thing where it was like a lunch menu on the back and some of the whatever language. Yeah. And he just translated it. Yeah. So they go on, like, deep dives. I'm like, damn.
That's investment.
It is. It is.
Investment.
Indeed.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. We had a grand old time with great sidebars and Alex's mystical adventures.
Indeed.
And also finding out that she is very handy with pennies or coins.
Listen, a lot of pennies, and I don't remember putting hot glue, but I remember one time I tried to, on my side of the door, heat the doorknob.
Oh, so when they tried to go for it, you were very Home Alone-esque with that.
See, I wouldn't even think about Home Alone. I did a thing, okay, this is when my sister's tooth was going to come out, and she wanted me to pull, like, someone to pull it out, but she didn't want them to pull it out. So we had, like, a banister, and so I tied one end to her tooth and the other end to a Listerine bottle, and I told her to just throw it over.
The banister?
Throw it over the banister, but she didn't want to. But I was like, okay, do you want to attach it to a door and slam the door, or you just want to throw it over a banister?
Ooh-wee!
Listen.
Next episode is going to be Alex's methods of torture.
These are not torture methods. These are just, see, it was giving her an option to take her own tooth out because she could release the Listerine bottle. If you really think about
Alex's
it.
Alex's torture. Thank you guys so much. All right. And that wraps up another episode of We're Rewatching and We're Talking. Thank you guys for tuning in. Please be sure to follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/WRAWT. And follow us on Instagram at WRAWT_POD. That's Rot Pod. See you guys soon.